today we're moving on to our next mitzvah, which is, again, we're skipping around a little bit, but we're covering most along the way. Next mitzvah I want to discuss in Hebrew is Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol, which in English is do not put an obstacle in front of a blind man. Don't put an obstacle in front of a blind man. So the simple meaning, if you take the verse literally, means don't take an obstacle and trip a blind man with it. That's what it means literally. What's very fascinating about this mitzvah is that the main meaning is not that. It's actually questionable if there's any prohibition based on this mitzvah of, obviously you shouldn't trip blind people, and love your neighbor as yourself, and be kind to all. But it's questionable if this mitzvah at all actually includes its simple meaning. The mitzvah itself actually includes a much deeper meaning, which the way Rashi explains it, Rashi says, based on the works of the sages, that lifnei asum adavar, somebody who's blind intellectually, meaning somebody's unaware of a certain fact or a certain direction to go in, don't give them bad advice, such as sell this field and buy yourself a donkey. That'll be a good investment for you. And then you really are just trying to deceive him and take the field from him. So don't give bad advice to your own advantage. That's how Rashi describes it. So lifnei iver, before a blind man, don't put an obstacle, means somebody who is unaware of where to go or what to do and needs advice, don't make them stumble. Don't give them bad advice. Don't lead them, mislead them, or lead them in the wrong direction.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Yeah.
Sometimes people who have a chip on their shoulders, like,
yeah,
let's say somebody asked you, is Aish, am I in the right direction of Aish? And you know, like, it's right there on the corner.
Right.
You say, yeah, you're in the right direction. But you don't say, hey, it's right there, just make your turn. Okay, some people will do that. They'll say, they'll just only answer the question, but they won't guide you further.
Right.
Is that's the same as putting an obstacle, right? Because they're keeping you, they're not getting you out of harm's way. They're not helping your stress any.
Right, I guess that's how vague it is, but if it's vague enough that it's not going to get you where you need to go, then essentially they're misleading you.
Okay.
If what they're telling you is, I guess, somewhat accurate and will get you to where you need, even though it's not as clear, then I don't know if I would say that they violated this prohibition in the Torah. But if they keep it vague, I mean, we'll talk about soon, some people keep things vague on purpose so they don't get blamed for bad advice also. We all know what that's like. But
asking for directions in other
countries.
Is this
the way to the unsupervised butcher? Well,
in Israel, for example, and you have really Dafka Israeli people, like in Caesarea, and my mother had like diarrhea and we were on a bus. I was asking where I could get some Pepto Bismol, which of course the brand name was not even registering. And they give you directions completely differently there than what I was expecting to receive, and it really didn't help. This is how many amos or how many meters. And I was like, they didn't know.
It wasn't on purpose.
No,
it was not misleading you yet. No. It's just a communication problem. That was it. Fine. So it's interesting here. So the simple meaning of the verse may not even be a prohibition at all, based on this verse. And the actual meaning of the verse is not to mislead others. And we'll talk about how it also plays out in different areas as well. So it's interesting. This is one place in the Torah where the rabbis show you that the main meaning of the verse is not at all a simple translation. And this is a major difference that our tradition has over, let's say, it used to be the Sadducees, different elements of Judaism, took things very literally. And if the literal translation of the Torah was it, and they didn't believe in any oral tradition. Whereas we believe the oral tradition is actually the main understanding, and literal translation at times is not even the main point. Famous example of that would be an eye for an eye. So a Jewish court of Beis Din will never take out your eye. There's no such punishment. Even if you took out someone else's eye, it means you pay them money in return for their eye. That's what it means. They would fine you. They would calculate how much the damage was worth, the ways of doing that, and you pay them. So an eye for an eye in the Torah is not literal at all. And it's taken totally to be an allegory for paying money in place of an eye. So this is an interesting place where we see that the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral tradition, I don't want to call it overrides, but supersedes the literal translation. Why the Torah writes it the way it does, because there's meaning behind that. And that's every single time this oral tradition comes in and gives you a different interpretation than the literal translation would be, then you have to ask them, why did God write it this way in the written Torah? But as traditional Jews, we view the oral interpretation of the Torah as the main understanding of the Torah. And you can't take a verse literally and say that's what it means, not knowing how the rabbis understand it in the oral law. So this is one example where the main understanding is not to mislead others, The simple translation is a very physical act of tripping a blind person. So tripping a blind person seemingly is under this prohibition, but it's certainly not the main part of the prohibition. The main part of the prohibition is not to mislead others. So that's an interesting aside. The rabbis teach us as well, this prohibition also includes if you cause another person to sin, or you support sinners. So if you were to assist a person in committing a sin of the Torah, that's also called lifnei iver, not to place an obstacle in front of a blind man. I'll use the term lifnei iver, the Hebrew term lifnei iver. And as well, somebody who is a sinner and you help them continue in their ways, that's also considered lifnei iver. We'll discuss examples a little bit later on. These are all different ways lifnei iver can express itself. So it could be misguiding somebody or misleading somebody, financially, even directions, anything like that, giving bad advice. It can mean helping somebody who's a sinner or causing others to sin. Now the reason for this prohibition, the way the understanding is obvious, is for the benefit of the world that people look out for another and lead them in the right direction. If we can't trust each other to give good advice and to support us and try to look out for our well-being, then society kind of crumbles. We have to be able to look at each other with the trust, there's a mutual trust that people are good, looking out for each other, helping each other out. And if that's not there, in society, everyone you ask can give you bad advice and mislead you and cause you to do the wrong thing and make you do sins and violate the Torah, so that would be a terrible society to live in. I think it's innate in human nature that that most people are good and try to help each other out, but the Torah gives us a prohibition that you must make sure that you guide others appropriately. It creates an atmosphere of positive interaction. It creates positive communities. It creates a society that can function and can carry on and can grow and can succeed. So that's the main understanding of this mitzvah. Another part of it, which I mentioned a little before, but we'll elaborate, is that sometimes we are likely to give, people give vague advice. And that vague advice is because they don't want to be held accountable if the advice is wrong. So someone asks you, should I shop at this store? You know, are there good deals there? I don't know, I'm just giving a random example. So people can respond to that in many ways. And sometimes your response is kind of non-committal, be taken a number of ways, and the reason for that is because if you're wrong, you don't want to be blamed for misguiding the person. So therefore, you try to give vague advice. This mitzvah tells you that no, you have to. If you're giving someone advice, make it clear, make it good, guide them in the right direction. You're about to say, "I don't know." You have to say, "I'm not sure what the answer is." That's okay. But if you start giving advice which is vague, or certainly if it's wrong, then you're in trouble. Now, if you're doing your best to give good advice and sincerely think it's right and it's wrong, so then you haven't violated lifnei iver, because that's not your fault. You gave them sincere, good advice to the best of your knowledge. We're not perfect, we're not prophets, we're not God, and we're fallible, we're human beings. But you can never knowingly give any advice which would mislead another person. The image which is painted by this verse is it calls the person, it's lifnei iver, before a blind person to put an obstacle. So we're not dealing with people who are physically blind. The people who are blind in other ways. What does it mean a person is blind? So being blind has many meanings. It could mean physically blind, but you can also be intellectually blinded. Some people, when you say, "I don't know something, I'm unaware, I don't know what to do," and in English we use the term, "I see," that means I understand, right? Or I don't see what you're saying, I mean, I don't understand what you're saying. We use the term in English as well. That person can be blinded in the intellect. We talk about acting blindly, a blind date, and all these things is because there's no knowledge involved, not because I don't see it. My eyes are here, my eyes work, thank God, but you don't understand something, you don't see something. That's called being blind. The Torah writes that it's forbidden to give bribes to judges, and the way the Torah describes it is hashochad, that bribes, ya'aver enei chachamim, it blinds the eyes of the wise. A bribe blinds you. Because you could be a judge, and even if the Gemara depicts different judges who accepted bribes, or even if they did not accept the bribe, but since someone attempted to bribe them, they also felt partial to that party. And even though they're trying to do the right thing, but once you've accepted a bribe, already your image in your head is different about this person. I'll tell you some stories from the Gemara in a second. But even someone who's attempting to be honest, a person can be blind in their intellect. So I'm trying to be honest, but since I have some sort of bias, some sort of predetermined opinion about the situation, I've been blinded, and I can't see the reality, I can't see the truth. I'll share with you a story from the Talmud. There's actually several stories, but I'll just share with you one. This one's about Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, who was actually a high priest at Kohen Gadol. a great sage, and he was supposed to judge a case. And a certain man came to him with what's called Reshus Hagez. The Reshus Hagez is the first of the shearings of your sheep. There's many gifts that you give to the Kohanim, to the priests, that just support them. They don't have any land, so they're supported by gifts from the people. And one of those gifts was when you first shear your sheep, every time you shear them, you give part of the shearings to the Kohen. So this person came to the Kohen, and he had Reshus Hagez. He had his first shearings of his sheep. And he said, so Rabbi Yishmael said to this gentleman, he said, "From where are you from?" He said, "I come from, you know, such and such a place." And he said, "Well, you had no Kohen there to give your shearings to. Why are you bringing it to me?" So he said, "Well, I came here because I have a court case. I have to, you know, I'm on trial, taking someone to the Beis Din, and therefore that's why I came to this area." And he said, "Well, you know, well, now that I'm here, I'll give you my shearings. I see you, you're the Kohen Gadol. Well, I'll give you the shearings. You can take it." So what happened at that point was Rabbi Shmuel was supposed to be a judge in the case. And this guy, he wasn't giving anything he wasn't supposed to get. Rabbi Shmuel was, he was a Kohen, he was supposed to get shearings. It wasn't extra money being given to him. It wasn't like a bribe. But he said to him that, number one, I'm not taking your shearings. Number two, I'm going to recuse myself from the case based on that. And he said, why? Because you know, now that you've even attempted to give me something, I already feel a little closer to you. That was the understanding. So the story continues that this gentleman, you know, so he had his trial, and Rabbi Shmuel was watching. He wasn't a judge on the trial, he was watching the trial. And he was there in his mind, acting kind of like a fan club for this person. He was saying, he should have said this, he should have made that claim, he should have, you know, proven it this way. And he said to himself, he said, look what I'm doing. I didn't even accept the gift. The gift wasn't even a gift. It was something which rightfully belonged to me. But just because of the gesture, I'm already cheering this guy on. So he said that that's why the rabbis say, tipach nafsham, that the souls of those who accept bribes should be, you know, should swell. And that's the curse. Tipach is the word. Tipach, to swell. Tipach nafsham. Let the souls of those who accept bribes swell. Because I didn't even accept a bribe. And look what happened to me. So certainly those who do accept real bribes, see how blinded they are. And that's what the rabbis mean when they say, shochad, the bribes blind you.
So what happens if your soul swells?
I don't know. It's definitely a curse. I'm not sure exactly what that means, have a swollen soul. I don't know what that means. It's some terminology of a curse, something bad. But I don't know what it exactly means. But the story depicts for us this idea of being intellectually blinded. And very slight gestures from others already make us partial and biased. And we're all aware of that, we know that. So the Torah refers to blind. It doesn't mean physically blind all the time. It means intellectually blind. Rav Hirsch writes, a person can be spiritually blind, a person can be morally blind. And what makes a person spiritually or morally blind? He says it could be due to passion. It could be due to ignorance, Rav Hirsch says. So physically blind aside, if you're morally or spiritually blind, it's going to be passion or ignorance which causes that. So what does he mean? So ignorance is the simple one. If somebody is ignorant, so as much as they try to see the truth in front of them, they just don't have the background to have the right perspective on it. So if someone, you know, plunked one of us down as a judge, I don't think any of you are lawyers or have a background in law, so we just don't know the facts. We couldn't judge the case because we just don't know where to start. We're blinded in that way. So ignorance certainly blinds us. We talk about persons that see the light, you know, and they think in that sense. There's understanding a person has when they can see. Things are clear around them. In the metaphor itself, you know, when it's dark in a room, you're unsure what's around you. When the lights are on, you can see what's around you. So that's the idea of ignorance blinding us. That's why wisdom is referred to as light. We say, chachmas adam, the wisdom of a person, tarapanav, lightens up his face. We talk about the Torah is compared to light, Torah or, the Torah is light, because light is something which denotes understanding, wisdom. So that's the idea that Rav Hirsch says of ignorance blinding a person, morally or spiritually. But there's a deeper point being made, which Rav Hirsch says, passion also blinds a person. Meaning that our own passions and desires can also blind us. You know, you have phrases like, you know, all's fair in love and war, things like that. You know, love knows no boundaries. You know, these crazy stories of people doing crazy things because of love and passion. That we know of.
Wars.
Yeah, you know. All's fair in love and war. That's, you know. And the Rambam, Maimonides says it. Rambam says that a person may not see the true way because of taivas libo, the desires of their heart. So it's a point which is elaborated on by Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman, who was one of the great Rosh Yeshivas before World War II, was actually killed during the war. I don't think he ever went to a camp. I think he's actually killed in his own city. The Germans came and killed him in his city. But he was a great Rosh Hashiva. He actually came to America several times over his lifetime to collect money. He taught here for a while, on and off. He was a Rosh Hashiva in the Baranovich Yeshiva, which was a very famous yeshiva, like high school age yeshiva, back in, I guess, I don't know, Lithuania or Poland, but definitely that area of Europe. So Rav Elchanan Wasserman writes, he asks a question, a very important question, which is, you know, we claim, we know that the Torah is true, we believe in God and precepts of the Torah. He said that, and we expect that a young Jewish child, as soon as they start understanding anything about life, already is taught emunah, belief and faith in God, to understand the Torah is true. And we look at, you know, by the time a kid reaches bar bat mitzvah age, we expect them to take on the entire Torah and be committed and be convinced. But yet you take great world thinkers, you look at somebody like Aristotle, you look at these great philosophers, you look at these geniuses throughout history, and they didn't accept the Torah, but they didn't accept monotheism necessarily the way that we do. And how is it that we expect so much out of ourselves and out of our children when even the greatest minds in history do not necessarily accept these ideas? That's the question he addresses. And he says, you know, Aristotle, the example given, the Rambam himself, Maimonides says that Aristotle, he calls him the Chacham, the wise man. I mean, Maimonides recognizes the wisdom of Aristotle. And he even wrote in a letter once that Aristotle was one step short of prophecy. You know, his wisdom is so great, he's like one step under a prophet. That's what the Rambam himself writes. We look at the Rambam as one of the wisest of all Jews to ever live, and he puts his stamp on Aristotle. Yeah, Aristotle wasn't Jewish. Aristotle did not accept Judaism. He did not accept the Torah the way we understand anything about God and Torah was not something Aristotle bought into. So why is it that we expect so much out of ourselves when these great intellectuals in history never bought into the concepts? So Rav Elchanan writes really the same idea we're talking about, that passion blinds a person. That's essentially what he writes. He says that if the starting point is, I have a set of desires in life. There's physical pleasure, there's material wealth, there's fame, there's greatness, there's honor, whatever the person has in mind. That person knows that if I accept the Torah, if I accept God, then I'm no longer in the driver's seat, because then I have to do what God says. So a person can be blinded based on their desires and their passions. So the way that, I'll try to read you a quote, the same way we said that shocha, the bribery, blinds a person, so we can be bribed by our own desires, our own wishes, our own passions, that can bribe us. That can make us partial, that can make us biased, and then we don't see the truth anymore. So even though we look at the, when we discussed the concept of munah a few months ago at length, we look at the concept of munah as being, many of them are very obvious and apparent to us, but if we don't have, if we let our passions take control, that actually can impact our intellect. I'm trying to find a good quote for you from here. It's hard to find on the spot. But that's the concept he writes. So he says that somebody who's a great intellectual throughout history, so they wanted to live life as they wanted to live life. They weren't willing to necessarily to submit, subject themselves to God's law, because they had passions and desires in this world. And if you start with that as your starting point, so then you're never going to accept God because you're blinded by it. And now you can't see the truth based on your own personal desires in life.
So are you saying that the answer to the question that you said, Robert, why do we expect Rabbi Elchanan?
Yeah, Elchanan Wasserman. Yeah.
Wasserman.
Yeah.
Why Jews can expect so much out of ourselves by Bar Mitzvah, we accept the commitment and, you know, devotion to Hashem and these precepts, because that once we make that commitment, we sort of set the boundaries where Hashem.
But basically, if we start off with a purity of heart and we're willing to accept truth, so then the truth should be apparent to us. If you start off with the desire for your own pleasure, to be a pleasure seeker, to live life based on your own rules, so then suddenly you're blinded and you can't see the truth anymore. You're not willing to see it because your mind has been blinded by your own personal goals and desires. That's what he writes. It's actually a long piece. I don't know if they published it in English, but it's a very fundamental piece in understanding Judaism and concepts of emunah and faith. It could be it's out there in English. I'm not sure. Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman. So we talk about shochad, that bribery blinds a person. That's this idea of passion blinding you. That's the same concept. The passion blinds you. And if you have passions in life, and they're not in line with concepts of emunah and serving God, so those passions will blind you, and if you can be blinded by the desire to live as you want. It's exactly what Maimonides writes much earlier than Rabbi Wasserman, which is that a person sometimes cannot see the truth based on the taivas libo, the taiva, the desires, the passions they have in their heart, that's going to blind us. So we can't see the truth anymore. And that's, so that's how he answers the question. And that's, you know, it's, if you think about it, it's very true. A lot of people out there are not willing to admit to truth only because they know if they admit to truth, it's going to change how they live. That's the problem. It's a challenge. In order to admit to truth, to concede that they're wrong and someone else is right, you need to change your life because of it. That's a difficult thing. Very difficult thing. There's a story of a great Rosh Yeshiva.
That's a problem even if you're not dealing with the issue of accepting Torah.
That's from everything. Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's
people
not,
hear
correct.
What they want to hear.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, not saying it's this problem in life in general, you know, but it answers the question about Torah as well. There's a story of a great Rosh Yeshiva who was in communication with a very scholarly professor in a university, and they kind of had a debate. The professor was atheist. The Yeshiva obviously is not atheist, and they're having a debate back and forth. So he said, "Let's meet together and discuss. But I want you to know, I'm a seeker of truth." So, you know, if you're right and I'm wrong, I'm going to throw off my yarmulke and run into your class in the college. But you just know, if I'm right and you're wrong, you put a yarmulke on and come into my class at the yeshiva. And the professor said, not so fast, you know, like I'm not going that far. But someone, you have to be someone of pure of heart seeking truth. That's the attitude. You know, if it's true, then I'm going to commit to it. But if we have other goals in mind, that lines up seeing the truth. And sometimes truth may be in front of our eyes and we'll just miss it or we'll ignore it or we'll convince ourselves it's not just because we don't want to have to be bound by it. So why am I talking about all this? Because the mitzvah here is lifting the ear. Before a blind person, don't put an obstacle. And a person can be blinded in so many ways. So somebody is blinded by their passion or by ignorance, blinded in their intellect, so then you have to make sure that you try to lead them back to the right direction. That's part of the mitzvah lifting the ear. Rav Hirsch says that this mitzvah warns us of carelessness in word or deed. The physical well-being of others is really, you know, on our shoulders, our responsibility. And anything which could harm the physical or spiritual well-being of our fellow human being, that would be fall into the category of this mitzvah.
Rav Hirsch
says this. So we'll talk about some practical cases where this might apply. We'll talk about some classic ones of the Talmud and of the Rambam, and then maybe some more modern examples. So the Rambam writes, based on the Talmud, that you're not allowed to sell weapons to non-Jews. Why is that? Because this can be used in inappropriate ways. Or to bandits. You know somebody is an armed robber, he comes into your gun store, you're not allowed to sell him a gun. That's lifting the ear, because now you're putting an obstacle in front of a blind man. He's blinded intellectually or morally, and you're giving him an obstacle. By giving him a weapon, you're allowing him to carry on in his ways. So you're not allowed to give that weapon or sell that weapon to the bandit. Unless it's for the protection of the Jewish people. So you talk about like modern Israel selling tanks and weapons and missiles. So it depends who they're selling it to. I mean, Israel would not sell to the countries that are the enemies of Israel. Israel selling to America probably would be fine, I assume. Israel selling to other more rogue countries, so that could be problematic halachically, because lifnei the iver. But that's one practical example. The Rambam also writes wild animals. If you sell wild animals to someone irresponsible, then you're causing damage to people, you're risking lives. So if you are, you know, and you know, you hear these crazy stories of people who like keep lions in their backyards, and like, you know, there's some crazy stories out there. You know, I heard that a couple years ago they found a lion like on the highway outside Cleveland because somebody had it as a pet and it got loose. I mean, there's some terrible stories. But selling any dangerous animal to somebody who's irresponsible, that'd be lifnei iver, because you're endangering others' lives by giving to someone irresponsible. So I get to the zoo, I assume, it'd be okay, because they're responsible, we hope. You're not allowed to assist people who violate the Torah. I mean, assisting them to violate the Torah. So for instance, the classic example given in the Talmud is that a nazir is somebody who has taken a vow not to drink any wine, cut hair, or become impure. That's a nazir. It's talked about in Parshas Naso a few weeks ago in the Parsha. So let's say there's a nazir, and he says, pass me the wine. So you can't pass him the wine, because now you're assisting him in his sin. He's not allowed to drink wine. Especially, the classic example where you violated on a biblical level is if, let's say he's on one side of the river, he can't reach it himself. He says, pass it over the river to me. There you violated on a biblical level. If he could do it himself anyways, just you're kind of making it more convenient for him, then it's on a rabbinic level. The biblical level is he could not have done it on his own, and you would pass him the wine. But these are all examples of lifnei iver. Similarly, giving non-kosher food to a Jew. A Jew asks you, please pass me that non-kosher food, or can you go get me a burger at McDonald's, please? So you're not allowed to do it, because you're assisting somebody who's not keeping kosher. Certainly, any deceptive form of causing another sin is a problem. You can never deceive anybody and draw them into any sort of sin. That's all part of lifnei iver. Bad business advice. You give someone a bad stock tip. You give them somebody's in competition with you in business. You try to give them some bad tips, so their business fails. That'd be lifnei iver. Because any sort of bad advice, whether it be in the spiritual world or in the monetary world, financial world, that's all lifnei iver. So you can't give bad business advice, bad stock tips, anything of the sort. Interesting question discussed. Rav Moshe Feinstein has actually a response about this. Can you give a light to a smoker? That's a very interesting question. I don't know if anyone smokes in here. Hopefully not. I don't want to offend anybody. There's a question. Halachically, is smoking permitted or prohibited? Now, that's a question. Now, it was very different 60 years ago than it is now. That's for sure. But according to most authorities now, it'd be prohibited to smoke because you're not allowed to risk your health. And now we know the danger in smoking much more than we did decades ago. So I think most authorities would tell you that it's prohibited to smoke nowadays. If that's the case, then giving a light to a smoker should be a problem because you're allowing us to do something which the Torah prohibits. Now, it's interesting, Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he discusses this, he wrote his response, it must have been, I don't know, probably 30, 40 years ago, I don't have the exact date on it. Then smoking is much more common. The dangers are not quite as well known as they are now. And he actually says something very interesting. He says that, now the Talmud discusses certain dangerous practices. And the Talmud says certain dangerous practices which people do and have become so common amongst the masses, they're allowed to continue doing them. Why are they allowed to continue doing them? He says that he quotes a verse, Shomer Pasayim Hashem, that God guards fools. God guards the fools. It's a verse the Gemara actually cites for some practices that are known to be dangerous, but everyone did them anyways. Now, you can't do something which you're relying upon miracles, and something which we know clearly is bad for your health, then you would rise on that.
What was your point? You said, so there's some dangerous practices that so many people do it, and Hashem protects fools?
Yeah, so the Talmud discusses certain practices which were known to be dangerous, but everyone seemed to have done them. And the Talmud says, that's okay that they do them, because there's this concept called God protects fools. Shomer Pasayim Hashem.
I thought orphans. Orphans widows.
Well, that's also true. The different concept. So Rav Moshe actually applied that to smoking. He said that people who smoke, who continue smoking, based on this concept of the Talmud, that God protects the fools. He says you shouldn't start, obviously, if you're already a smoker and addicted, so there's no halachic problem in continuing smoking. That was many decades ago. Many authorities would say nowadays that even Rav Moshe may change his mind now that there's more information about it. Smoking is much less common as well. That all contributes to the halacha. So Rav Moshe, based on what he wrote, he actually said you're allowed to give light to a smoker because he actually personally felt that a person's allowed to continue smoking. But assuming that nowadays other authorities would tell you, and maybe even Rav Moshe himself, who's no longer alive, so we can't ask him.
What
does
Rav Rubin say?
What?
What does his son say?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But oh yeah, okay. Good question. Assuming smoking would be prohibited, then you can't give light to a smoker either. So that's one, another practical example. So we're dealing with health, we're dealing with money, we're dealing with observance of Torah. Another interesting question was posed to Rav Moshe Feinstein. There was a group up in a bungalow colony in New York. Those who aren't from New York, these New Yorkers all go up to these colonies during the summer. How do they do it? Never understood it. Just kind of leave life behind for 3 months and forget their jobs and go up to bungalow colonies. Let's go back and forth. I don't know. But I don't know. Those of us who are not here can't really relate. But anyways, there was a bungalow colony. They went to form a Friday night minyan in a large social hall in this bungalow colony. However, the problem is that the manager of the bungalow colony was Jewish and wasn't Shabbos observant. So if they had a minyan in this building, she'd come in afterwards, turn off all the lights. And she was the manager, it was her job to conserve money, and she won't listen to them and say, no, don't turn the lights off. She said, I'm turning the lights off, I want to save my money. So they asked her, Moshe Feinstein, are we allowed to make this minyan? Because we know if we make this minyan, we're causing another Jew to violate Shabbos. Can we do such a thing? That was the question posed. So Rav Moshe actually said that even if there's nowhere else to daven together, and it's too dark, you can't daven in the room, no one knows the prayers by heart, you're not going to daven in a minyan at all, you still cannot do it, he said. Because if you're going to have a minyan which will cause a Jew to for sure violate Shabbos, you can't make the minyan. better everyone goes and davens in their own bungalow and doesn't get together and make a minyan, rather than cause this lady to violate Shabbos. Based on the concept of lifnei iver lo sitin michil.
And she's Jewish.
She was Jewish, yeah. If it was not Jewish, it would be a problem. Because she was Jewish is the problem. He said if it was just a concern that she might do it, but wasn't for sure, then it would be allowed. But if you know she's for sure going to do it, you can't make the minyan. That's what he told them. So it's an example of, that's how far lifnei iver goes, even at the expense of a minyan. So I guess at a bungalow colony, they decided to daven in their own houses by themselves. They couldn't anywhere else to make a minyan.
Used to cause problems with cousins who lived in Baltimore. We couldn't like invite them to our someplace because they would come and they would drive, and there was no way they would sleep over, so couldn't even invite them in the first place. They used to
be. Right. Yeah. So I mean, the other issue is there's questions about, let's say somebody would like to, you feel inviting somebody to Shabbos even though they drive will help them in connecting more Judaism. So is that allowed? So there's different opinions to that. You know, people are going to drive on Shabbos, but are you setting them up to violate Shabbos? Or maybe it's a positive thing because you're actually helping them connect more with Shabbos than before. So that's something that we should discuss.
Yeah. Somebody's getting married, the Orthodox rabbi is officiating, but it's in a non-kosher restaurant?
I assume that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume that's a problem.
Okay.
Because
where are you going to sniff? Take it back. What happens if a bungalow colony, if one of those men who they're not going to daven a minyan has to say Kaddish? That's a big problem.
Well, they shouldn't be in the bungalow colony.
Yeah, he's even so. But Rav Moshe's point is that even if it's for the sake of a Kaddish or minyan, that's not an excuse to cause someone else to sin. You know, that's the lifnei iver is also prohibition in the Torah. You know, saying Kaddish for a loved one is not a Torah command. It's a later concept. But lifnei iver is a verse in the Torah itself.
It's not even rabbinic mitzvah.
It's a concept to help a soul, but it's not a mitzvah. Yeah, it's a concept we use to help a soul, elevate a soul. But it's not something which is a requirement, and it's something which everyone, of course, wants to do as much as they can for a departed loved one. But when it comes in the face of violating a Torah prohibition, so that takes precedence. Another interesting example is, this was written in a response by, it's called the Be'er Moshe, by Moshe Klein, is his name. He was a Hasidic rabbi, lived in Brooklyn. I think he moved to Israel in his life. So he asked the question, let's say you run vending machines. So can you leave your vending machine on Shabbos and stopped?
It's a business, though?
It's a business, yeah, it's a business. Because people are going to come and put in money, and you're going to be doing business on Shabbos. It's your business.
I would think that there's exceptions for business, for employment.
No.
Just guessing. You're asking a question.
Yeah, so that was the question. I'm definitely open to guesses. But.
I would say no, because a Jew might purchase something on Shabbat, not knowing.
So you're a
I say yes, because it's his business.
So it's livelihood.
I would say no, because
Is he on the site? He's not on site. He's he's off in shul davening on Shabbos, and he has vending machines all around the city. You know, that's his business.
I think it's done. I mean, I know for people who own businesses like that, when they leave miles and they're ready to run.
What's the rule? Jew had a vending machine. Does he have to have all the kosher things in it?
It could be a similar question. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Related question.
Not even how he's the vending machine. You're not responsible for its contents.
It's already set.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not.
They're still paying you money. And
So it's not the same.
So go ahead. What's the answer?
So I mean, there's a few factors involved. The fact that this person is actually making money on Shabbos is not a question we're discussing right now. That's a different question. Can he conduct business on Shabbos? But we're talking about in the realm of causing other Jews to violate Shabbos by purchasing a vending machine. So in terms of that, it would depend. He says. I mean, let's assume you're in a Jewish area. The machine's let's say it's in Israel, and most people around are Jewish. So in a case like that, he says it'd be a problem. And in terms of exception for business, this is still, it's a Torah prohibition to cause another Jew to sin. And you have to, you're actually forced to give up all your money to avoid violating a Torah prohibition. When it comes to a positive command, such as taking a lulav or putting on tefillin or eating matzah, so for those, you're only required to give up 20% of your assets. So if the matzah costs more than 20% of your assets, so then you're off the hook. But when it comes to a Torah prohibition, you're actually required to give up all your assets not your life, but all your assets in order to avoid violating that. So even if the person might lose his business, there's no excuse for violating with me'iver. However, if the vending machine is an area where it's not primarily Jewish, and odds are most of the customers around are going to be non-Jews, who are allowed to go ahead and buy from your Shabbos, office, maybe even encouraged, so therefore, there'd be no other problem. But if you're in a place, even if you're in a place where there's lots of Jews around, there's a lot of other options besides your vending machine, it could be it's okay. Because you're not setting them up, because they can just go down the street and get it from a different vending machine, which is owned by a non-Jew. However, if let's say you're in Israel, or in a very, very Jewish area, let's say in New York or something, where you know everyone around is Jewish, and all the stores around are Jewish, and all the vending machines around are Jewish, so then he actually says you have a problem, you'd have to turn your machine up before Shabbos, you have to empty out the contents, whatever you have to do to make sure nobody purchases from you on Shabbos. So that's what he writes.
So then the answer is...
It really depends upon if it's a Jewish area or not. If it's a Jewish area and odds are your customers will be Jewish, then you should not operate that on Shabbos. If you own a vending machine here in the greater Washington area, you're fine. Because most people around are not Jewish. You cannot count on the fact that most of your customers are Jewish. That's not likely. So then you wouldn't have any problem.
You have the same issues today with online businesses.
Yeah, right. That's actually a good point. If you own an online business, so people will be purchasing from you on Shabbos. So are you required to shut down your website on Shabbos or not? So seemingly it would be the same thing. Now, since the internet's open to all, and most of the world's not Jewish, seemingly it's not a problem. That's what I would assume.
Well, actually, even the Jewish websites that are internet, they're all international. So they're always because, Shabbos is different, right, for wherever you are.
So you see, even the Jews out there, a lot of them are not having Shabbos at the same time. That's a good point also, right? So you have that, and you also have the fact that most people in the world are not Jewish, and everyone has access to your website.
Like you can order from Arts World on Shabbos, right? Because it's for the whole world.
You wouldn't know.
Seriously.
Practically
please.
Speaking.
I'm serious about this. Arts World does not close down the site. That's the point I'm making.
Uh-huh.
So people, anybody can order on Shabbos.
Right. But the Arts World, I guess for this point. Right.
But
I think the point's the same point, that since most of the customers in the world who may see the website are not Jewish, I mean, it happens practically most are going to be Jewish in Art School. Most people going to Art School are probably Jewish, I assume. But since the store is open to the world on the internet, I would assume it's okay. Now, the second issue, which is not the topic of this class, which is a Jew allowed to make that money on Shabbos? That's from the other end. So let's say that there's no issue of lifnei iver, there's no issue of causing others to sin, but yet you're making profits on Shabbos. So how do you deal with that one?
Especially with the time changes. Like if you've got a website in Israel and somebody here buys, it's okay for them, but if it's your website in Israel...
Yeah. this is
at least you order on Shabbos, but they don't really do it until Sunday.
Right.
What's pricing at home?
I don't know, when they put the credit card in, has that money? I mean, there's a lot of issues involved.
Is there a computer?
Well, to even extend the question.
I don't have my own website.
Kind of going beyond the scope of the class as well, to extend the question, let's say you're in Israel, and it's early Sunday morning, or rather late Saturday night. Can you call America at that point? Because in America, it's still Shabbos. Now, certainly to call a Jew who might pick up the phone, you shouldn't do. Are you allowed to call America, let's say, and speak into an answering machine that they can hear? That's actually a question. My son brings home the question of the week from school every week. Mm-hmm. And one week, the question that his Rebbe sent home was, are you allowed to call, let's say, someone has a child in Israel, and they want to tell you some news, and it's Shabbos in America. Can they call? You won't answer the phone, and they'll talk into the answering machine. You can listen in. Can they do that?
You're not supposed to listen.
So for them, it's not Shabbos, but they're actually operating an answering machine in America where it's Shabbos, and others are listening to it.
Was there a clear answer?
What's the answer?
I don't know if my son ever told me the answer, because they always wait until next week for the answer, and then he forgets to tell me. So, I mean, I personally would think that, I would assume it's not a problem. I'm not saying that as a practical ruling, but I would assume it's not a problem. But that's an interesting question for sure. But that's off topic. But all these are issues of lifnei iver. So we can sum it up. We'll finish with this. We'll sum it up into a few areas. So you have the area, the literal prohibition of tripping a blind man may or may not be a prohibition. Certainly don't trip blind men. Definitely don't recommend that. If you do it, even if you may not have violated this, you certainly violated other concepts of the Torah, of taking care of other people, loving other people, not hurting other people. So don't trip any blind men. But the primary understanding of this mitzvah is, number one, to make sure you advise others positively. Don't give bad advice. Number two, and remember the fact that being blind is taken figuratively to mean someone blind intellectually, morally, or spiritually. Number two, do not lead any others to sin. Do not help anybody who is sinning. Don't deceive anybody to cause them to sin. And that's really where this prohibition, and also for physical health, that you should make sure they don't do anything which is going to damage anyone's physical health. It's also with the e-bear problem.
So smoking is a problem, because then again, smoking affects everybody.
Yeah, so seemingly, based on current knowledge, yeah, absolutely, because you're expecting everyone else's health. Yeah.
I'd like to return to a point. We said you may not give vague advice if your goal is not to get involved. I don't want to get blamed. Can you say, I don't want to recommend a plumber. Who the one who worked for me might not work for you.
Content.
No, it's not a hint. No.
I guess there you're saying I don't want to recommend him. That's already
not clear. True. I was thinking at first of the case. Who did you use for your roofing? You know, I don't recommend contractors, because whoever worked out for me might not work out for you. And if you have a bad experience, I don't want to be responsible for it.
Right.
So this is not being vague. This is saying,
I think that's clear. I think that's clear. I don't think that's vague. I mean, vague is kind of when you give an answer that
you
has like...
decline to give advice.
Yeah, that you could certainly do. You don't have to give advice if you're worried about the advice you give is not going to be accurate or correct. Or.
But if you liked your plumber, would you give out his name?
You could just... Preface it by what you just said.
I'm very happy with one. If they go work for a friend, then the friend is really unhappy.
See, I see it the other way around. I'm on the listserv, there's always recommendations. And if I had somebody, if I had success with someone, contractor, doctor, it doesn't matter, I give that person's name to help their business. And it's not, I don't feel responsible if it doesn't work out for them. I mean, if somebody wants a dentist. And
but you're also, you're giving sincere advice. You're saying, I really think this person did a good job, and I think you should
do
that.
That's my opinion. Because I help their business, I try to help their business. I'm just telling you how I see it.
I wasn't questioning whether or not you should or should not do it this way.
We
said it's not permitted to give vague advice.
Right. But what you're saying, I don't think it's vague.
Because vague was misleading.
Right. I'm trying to think of...
vagueness becomes misleading, that's not allowed. The question was, are you allowed not to give advice?
Right. So...
it's not good advice.
Yeah, if you think your advice may not be...
The guy worked fine for me. I'm very happy with what he did.
But
I don't know if
it,
I don't know if the next...
To personality. If the guy deals with somebody else, they might not get along. They might be friction.
Right. Yeah, to refrain from giving advice if you're not sure if it's going to work out, that's fine. But to purposely say something that has many implications.
I don't think he worked for me.
I'm trying to think of a good example. You know, you say someone asks you, you know, should I go to this hotel on vacation? And you say, well... I had a nice time there. So they come back and say it was awful. You say, well, I didn't tell you to go. I said, I had a nice time there. I didn't say you should go. You know, just you say something which it's non-committal. You don't want to say, yes, go. You told me to go. So okay, so I'm in trouble.
If
I say I had a nice time there, you know, it's a nice area, okay. If I didn't say you should go, I don't think you're going to like it, you know. So there's a response like that, which kind of you can go back to and get yourself out of take the blame off of yourself. That would be the issue.
You're being late.
What was the topic today? It was about giving